Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address. Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening.
All right, guys, welcome to this week's episode of Band of Traders. I'm here with Kyle and Baba Yaga. Something creative. I don't know. We have nicknames here.
I mean, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. All right, what are we doing tonight?
I don't know. Go ahead.
Talk to Sue Pullen to get yourself a new mullet.
I was gonna give you a shot to do one of these times just to see if anybody memorized it yet.
Do you remember when you let me be the sub in guest host back, or whatever?
Back on the old show.
From the old show. And I tried to do my best impersonation.
I thought you did pretty good on that.
You know. All right. We try.
Since I'm not gonna try to redo that intro. Tonight we're gonna be looking at a couple major cases that have been resolved, followed by discussion on what we've been exploring since our conversation with 2-Year Flipper. And if you missed that one, stop right now and go listen to it. You can thank me later. After that, we'll sum up our past week in the good, bad, and ugly before wrapping up some new bull predictions. Before we check in on those ongoing results, let's get the self-promotion stuff out of the way first. Baba, talk to me, buddy. Anything new going on?
Hey, buddy. Let's see. Nothing super new. Just rolling with the same things. So, yeah, what's new is that I think a lot of people in our Discord have, and maybe listeners have not checked out Prop Alpha. So if you have ever struggled with, for instance, back testing on Sierra, or if you've had an idea that you would love to see the efficacy of over a large sample set, there's some really cool tools that you can use to figure that out. So not just, here's where you should buy or here's where you should sell, but there's actually a way to build in confidence in a setup with historical backtesting stuff it's fairly simple to use. So check it out.
But can we get a demo set up for that?
Yes, sure. In the Discord?
Just to get someone to show us kind of how to walk through the platform, how to use it, some tips and tricks, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, a good demo for backtesting a simple simple strategy would probably be pretty helpful.
Yeah.
So we can definitely set that up.
All right, yeah, let's get that going. Flair, you got anything you want to promote, bud?
No, man. I just like you guys. Let's do it.
Promote the show. There you go.
Whiskey. What
are you drinking today? There you go.
I got the good old fashioned here. Good old fashioned.
Good old fashioned. All right. Let's see. For show news, next week we got episode 3 of the Economics for Traders miniseries featuring Eric Mason and Mr. Banks. The next Clio special should be coming soon too, and this one's featuring Mr. Anthony Crudelli. So if you got any questions or suggestions for future guests, or if you just want to yell at a stranger on the internet, do that via Twitter at FinancialAdept1, join the Discord and just slide into our DMs, or you visit bandoftraderspodcast.com, browse the guest directory, check out all the deals and discounts collected over the years.
What did you say? You said if you have a something to say, slide into our DMs. Here's what I have to say. How is it that Clio comes in, fresher to the fold, and she gets Crudelli, and our Friday night gang has been here through thick and thin, and we just get each other every week. I don't get it. I mean, yeah, we got 2-year flipper, but Crudelli, I mean, dude, come on.
You got to pick and choose where you're going to put these ones at. I thought he'd make for a great one of those humanity ones.
Well, yeah, for sure, but I think as a, it needs to be a two episode discount deal.
I think you might do yourself some more favors if we could modify the recording times. I think that's cost us a few guests.
Who should we go get? We should go get some people for Friday. I'll recruit. Let me get a little list together.
Send us your suggestions. If you listen in, send us the people you want us to talk to. We'll make something happen.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, should we check in with the predictions, the ongoing ones?
What was our last predictions? Yes. All right. Fill me in. Was I part of it?
You were, but I don't think you participated. We were doing, well, first of all, banks, still got to mention, there's no rate cuts till June, still looking strong. No, we did March Madness brackets. And I think only a couple of us filled them out. I don't see Baba's in here. I don't see yours.
I didn't
feel
one
out. Yeah, I was on vacation.
Yeah, my bracket is actually doing pretty good, except for I got pretty jacked in like Southern Division. I'll have to look at it, but I've got some runners here.
I got half of mine is completely destroyed, but I still got a championship side.
Yeah, there was some division where I got just like completely, like I have nobody left.
Yeah. So what's your point total right now then?
I think it was like 60 something. 60 right. Or no, 40 something with like a potential of 70 or 80 something. I'll have to look it up. It wasn't good.
I need your ESPN scoring to convert it.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, Mr. Banks.
Yeah, I'll look it up.
On ESPN's results, Mr. Banks is leading our group bracket, but I'm guessing you're probably doing better than a 540 that he's got. I've got 510, max of 1420.
I could go fill one out right now and probably
take the lead. Gave you guys a sweet 16 second chance, but I don't think anybody saw that one either.
Oh, my God. Oh, hell.
Sorry, Kyle.
That's all right. That's all right. It's all for good fun anyway. What are we going to predict this? I think coming up, we're going to do some Sunday gap predictions. People want to stick around to the end and catch that. But for now, I think maybe it's time to get into our first topic. I wanted to talk about this last week, but I couldn't pass up the opportunity to pick 2-year flippers brain. But I don't know if you guys saw the Atlas trading case got dismissed. And then we had another big update in the SBF trial. He got sentenced this past week, 25 years.
Good.
I was kind of surprised to see that much. I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are on both of these.
I mean, I'm kind of surprised to see not that much. I think a lot were expecting significantly more. I mean, it's a lot, don't get me wrong, but like, I mean,
for SBF,
it's as blatant as it gets.
Yeah, what were they were shooting for like 40 or 50 years on that case.
Multiple like lives. You know, obviously he's pretty well tied in. Listen, dude, this is total armchair quarterback. I have no idea what I'm talking about here. So this is all just, you know, my extensive expertise from being a member of FinTwit or whatever. But I mean, it's the blockchain. So it's kind of one of those things where it's like now when like all the forensic blockchain nerds come in and do their thing, it's like I watched or was looking at a thread today where they were like tracking some of the like stuff that he was doing with like once they started taking control of the sort of like customer funds and some of the activity that they were doing and some of these like like he was buying NFTs and he was promoting different things. Like it was just wild what he was doing. He was, you know, like wrapping coins and then dumping them into different projects, like basically took out Celsius, which caused like Two Arrows to go down. Like all of this just like completely just like almost like Bond villain type stuff, but like modern day crypto nerd.
What about Celsius?
So he, I'm going to speak completely out of my ass here. Basically like he market sold a bunch of basically like wrapped ETH or wrapped some fucking coin that caused basically Celsius to go bust, which when Celsius went bust, Two Arrows was heavily invested in them, caused them to go bust. And a lot of people are speculating that he knew exactly what that was going to,
you know, sort of do. And then honestly, the same reason, you know, I think that the guy from Binance is in a bunch of heat as well, because, you know, they say that, you know, his sort of like, oh, I'm going to dump all my soul, whatever, or his FTT token, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Was something similar. But yeah, if you watch sort of like the footprint of what these guys did, I mean, it's just blatantly, they were like moving customer funds into a hedge fund in Alameda that was just losing money. Like, it's almost like they were doing it, to the best of my knowledge, it's almost like they were like wash trading just to like make it look like they were putting in volume as a hedge fund and like just losing money. Like, there was a ton of people, like smart traders, that were just like arbing their daily activity to make it look like they were actually still trading as a fund, that were like making money off of their like daily purchases and things like that. I don't know.
Jesus.
Super criminal stuff. Like, the guys, that whole crew, anyone in the know should be, you know, in jail for a while for that stuff.
Did we find out if he was behind the hack? I seriously, it looked way too coincidental that, like, the day he loses communications with everybody in the company, that they get hacked for whatever that was that stole all the crypto from their wallets using like backdoors and things that only he had the passwords for.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. This is the crazy thing. You know, like the unicorn company deal, like privately held companies that are worth more than $10 billion, I think, is like a unicorn startup. If you think of that, that's like an incredibly large amount of money. They lost, like, I'm estimated it's like 8 to 11 billion in customer funds. So that's like, for comparison's sake, like Plaid is a $13.5 billion company. Ripple is $15 billion. They're in the crypto space as well. Discord is a $15 billion privately held company. There's probably some other ones if I look through this list, but that would be like one of like the same magnitude as if like Plaid, you know, financial services Plaid that everyone's heard of and used and probably like whatever, just was like, gotcha. like that's crazy, dude. Like, once you're at that, yeah. And it's clear that they had no idea. Like, there was never a plan to, I don't think, for like, you know,
giving that money back.
This is gonna actually make money.
Is the wild thing not like, I mean, obviously it's a classic Ponzi-esque scheme, right? Like, they have billions of dollars, there's always money coming in as long as the show or the music keeps playing, the show goes on. And in crypto, you know, specifically like with the halving and like these cycles and, you know, whatever, like, if you could just make it a little bit longer, like somewhere in the like 3-year span on any given Ponzi, and you have a bunch of assets, like as long as you have some assets, it's going to go up like 5x, 6x, 10x, 100x, like crypto does, you know, every 2 to 3 years. If he would have made it like another like 2 months, they would have had
it'd still be
billions
business.
Of dollars. They would have they would have no losses on the book whatsoever.
Well, they had billions. They would have probably had hundreds of billions at that point.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, like the customer funds that were missing, which was like, you know, I mean, oh yeah, it was only like $7 billion or something like that. But like, I want to say that like the price of Solana when they went bust was like $16, and it's trading like $200 recently. So you're talking about something that they had billions of dollars of that just 10x'd, and the complete funds that they were missing, you know, sort of whatever, missing, stole, whatever. Like, if you would have made it another 6 months, no one would have known. I mean, maybe they would have known, but like, they would have been like, no, we had this money the whole time. We just put it over here. We labeled it a little bit differently. We're so sorry. Like, it would have been a slap on the wrist or whatever, but because they all came, you know, like, you know, marching down the front doors for the money and they didn't have it, you know, what else do you do but throw your hands up and say, hey, I'm sorry, I don't have it. Another 6 months and I don't know if anybody would have even known the full story.
Isn't the other thing that's interesting is they like swooped in and saved some random other exchanges along the way, right before they fell off the cliff.
Yeah, they were there with spending other people's money. Like, oh, yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah, we'll take this.
Yeah. I can buy it. Yep.
That.
Well, and the crappy thing, too, is, and again, I don't know if this will stick, but I saw, dude, this guy's name is so hard to pronounce, Horolibus Vulgaris or something like that. He's like a classic, like, vintage sports bettor, like one of the best. I think he works in the NBA now. Anyways, he's kind of big in the crypto space, owns like a soccer team now, too. But he was saying that the FTX, you know, whatever, like the government, when they seize all of the assets or whatever, and then they try to pay the people back that were wronged. They're paying people back based on like the price of the coin asset or the asset
at that time,
at the time of sort of seizure. So the government is sitting on, you know, whatever, you know, 100,000 Solana coins, right? That they have to pay people back $16 per coin that they're trading at, like, you know, whatever, again, let's just say $200 right now, $175 a coin now. So, like, what is the government just taking a fucking 100x on this stuff? Like, how does this work? It's so mind boggling.
Well, that explains why it said in that article that they're probably going to be able to make everyone whole. Like, yeah, no shit.
Oh yeah, they're going to make them whole, no problem, because they've easily 10x'd like the stuff while they were holding it. Like, it's not like they dumped it; they didn't sell it. They sold some of it, but like, I mean, it's absolutely bonkers that like they could had they done nothing. Like, everyone would be in a better position, which is oddly, you know, whatever. I mean, like, had they done nothing, and you have to wonder, like, was that part of his plan, right? Like, I'm pretty sure the guy who's a, you know, he's like a giga nerd genius, whether he was a criminal or not, he probably knew that, like, there was some barrier to, like, we can fuck around and not find out, like, as long as we can make it, like, 2.5 years or so every time we commit this major fraud, because every 3 years, this shit's just going to go through another cycle and we'll at least triple, quadruple, you know, 10x all of these coins that we're sitting on. And we'll just pay back all of the stupid stuff we did for the last 2.5 years. He was 2 months away from that. And honestly, like I'm my guess is most people who lost a ton of money in FTX or, you know, in, you know, the Celsius or in the two arrows or any of the sort of like things that happened because of all this, they probably all would have been in a better position had none of this really come to light, because the dude would just have all of the money back right now. 100% of it, if not more.
Yeah, that's a tough one, right?
I mean, you don't want to, obviously he deserves to be caught, whatever, all that good right. stuff. But it's funny how like the government steps in and like the guy's plan might not have been like, you know, for a, you know, whatever, a bond villain. He probably had a decent plan. It was probably going to work out. It's just, you know, he needed a few more months right. to work the thing out. But what about the other guys, the Atlas guys, man? Like that's crazy.
Well, that one was nuts to me. Because, like, you look at why that case was thrown out. It was literally because...
Clerical error.
Yeah, what they tried to charge him with. Because the fact that those shares are trading on an exchange, that they're selling their shares through an exchange, that people in their Discords are buying on an exchange, means that they're not directly taking money from their hands. And that's what caused it to be tossed out.
Yeah, like, the classical definition of
fraud
that
wild.
Is you have to, like, basically take something from someone or attempt to defraud them out of something specifically, but because they were just giving them sort of quote-unquote advice, or not even really advice, just sort of like sharing their positions, you know, not financial advice, that they personally didn't defraud them, that the people themselves willingly went to an exchange and purchased stocks knowing the risk, was basically like the loophole, right?
Yeah, that loophole's got to get closed soon, right? Because otherwise, it's just a free for all.
Well,
right
I mean, does that not just give Ponzi's like a, or not Ponzi's, pump and dumps like a green light?
Yeah.
Well, unless there was one thing I saw in that that article, and I'll post the link to that in the episode here, but it did say that they are going to be able to refile the case if they want to, so they could come up with some different charges since these ones got tossed out, is what it looked like. So this may not be over yet. Probably won't be a 30-year prison sentence like they were aiming for to start with, but
you know, it's interesting too. They weren't really. I mean, they were truly like, "Hey, here's the next banger." Like they were a call out, and then I find it interesting that there was enough interest and like or a thirst for someone to be right. And if we found these four guys that know how to find the right ones, they had enough meat on that bone to for them to buy it, for them to tell their close group of friends that lived close that in those apartments to buy it. Then they filtered that and sold it to this Discord group. And then that Discord group had a group they fed it to. And then it was like, it was getting fed down like five, probably more than five, but at least five. It was way more than five, but you know, levels down, removed from the original Atlas guys who said, all right, this is the next one, boys, let's go. It just like makes me feel some type of way that people wanted someone to be right about that so bad that they would take it, even if it was seventh in line, and buy it on the hope that like this one bangs. And I'm sure that people made money, people lost money, but I just find it interesting that you would spend, you know, money to be in those rooms to do the whole deal versus like, let me figure out how, like, I don't understand how people don't think, let me figure out how to be the person finding them. Like, yeah, I don't know
how. How do I build up a million person following to sell calls to?
Well, not that, but how do you just I just guess I just completely struggle to understand the, like, I'm starving on the side of the road, feed me, versus I need to go make some food, like find a way to get food. Like, and I don't mean that. I don't mean anything negative of people who are hungry or have to, you know, stand on the street corner. I just use that as analogous to the idea that there is a way to educate yourself, even in that type of trading, learn, get around people who are doing it, but not people who are saying buy here, sell here. People who are saying, let me help you understand what it is that I understand that creates the opportunities for me. Like, why would that, how is that not, it's just crazy that that's not the thing that people are like, you know, selling five hands down the Discord servers for,
right?
You know, like a hot penny stock pick is that, and that it lasted as long as it did and that people were for the most part fine with it. If that one dude hadn't, you know, flipped on him, I'm sure that it would have continued on.
Well, I mean, the thing is, the bigger it gets, the more it works too.
Oh man. Right?
Well, it's you're like pouring more water down a
definitely
funnel.
A law of orange numbers.
And like Flair, you had a, I think you explained it well, like the game of hot potato. Would you say only fucks the last guy holding the potato?
Well, and I mean,
100%.
There's probably a lot of people making a lot of money during this time too.
To your point, Baba, it's like, okay, if you look at the entire ecosystem of people that were like involved in this, all the way from the Atlas crew to the last people that were holding the hot potato, right? The guys who always lost, or, you know, whoever on any individual stock.
The last Discord to join.
Yeah, well, you know, whatever. And even there was probably some arb to be had. Like, how many of the people in that full ecosystem were completely unaware of what the trade was?
No one.
Right? Like, and that's the part where it's like, listen, I don't think anyone, you know, I mean, listen, if you're willingly taking part of a pump and dump and you are on the losing end of one of those, and you have 100% of yourself allocated to one of these trades, whatever, right? Like, honestly, it sucks, but, you know, whatever. But like, my guess is, like you were sort of alluding to there, Baba, is like, it's such a small percentage of people that were naive enough to actually think like, oh, look at these guys who really pick great stocks all the time. And they always tend to go up, you know, at least 25 to 30%. Sometimes they go up 200% and then they always crash. But I think this one is the one that's going to keep going up and up and up. And I'm going to diamond hand this thing. Like, you know, the whole thing that has to be like such a small portion of that ecosystem that, I guess what I'm trying to say is everyone knew that they were playing a game of hot potato, right? And so there's actually a trade in there somewhere. And I think most of the people were actually taking, you know, the trade is always an inefficiency in the market. The market here just happened to be the market of who had the information first, from the Atlas guys picking the stock, front loading it, to them sort of like either whatever their marketplace looked like of like selling it to other Discords or just telling it to their friends, to the time they posted it on Twitter, to the time when they told people they started selling or who they told they started selling. And then when the next people started selling, all of this like information sort of had sort of an inefficiency to it somewhere in there. And I think that there was probably a handful of people along each tier of this ecosystem that figured out a way to profit off of the inefficiency, right, at least more than they lost, right? And so I think that's what kept growing the thing, is that the network was so big and the ecosystem was so large that even if you were in this sort of like, you know, tier eight of the ecosystem, you still found a way to profit off of tier nine, or even sometimes profit off of like stalking the information from the guys that you knew were in tier four or five. Right. And so I think, I guess what I'm getting at is like the trade wasn't the stock pick. The trade was the team and the information. And my guess is that a lot of people that were involved in this, you know, that were like sort of like actually trading it, that weren't actually getting the information of what the stocks were in ahead of time or whatever, pre-tweets and stuff like that, were doing some version of this. They were watching the Twitter, they were in the Discords, they were in all of these other Discords, and they were trying to sort of do some sort of like inefficiency of this network of pump and dumpers in order to try to find a way to, you know, and the thing is you don't just have to long the stocks.
Yeah.
You can short the things too, exactly, right? So you can short this whole thing as well. And so I think there was a handful of people that were like doing this sort of like, where's the trade, where's the inefficiency idea around this. And the small people that lost money were either A, you know, late in the, you know, information chain, or two, like B, just like greedy to hold on, or C, just completely naive. And it's those like that last group that like actually thought like, wow, look at these guys, you know, look at them call stocks. They always go 50%, but I'm always late. Like, yeah, that sucks. It's definitely shitty, but my guess is, and again, I think what you were kind of alluding to, Bob, is that like, I would say better than like 80% of the people involved in any of these names and any of these tickers knew exactly what they were getting into. And I would even say a strong percentage of those people had some idea of a system of how they were going to beat the pump and dump scheme this time on this ticker.
Mm-hmm. So if you think of like, so caution to the world, right? Or, you know, anyone listening to this, not the whole world, but like one of the like forward thoughts in your mind on anything like that. So in like your trading, in some little gem of magic that you've happened upon some group of people that are telling you exactly what to do every time. And so like, oh, this is it. I'm going to quit my job and do this. Or, you know, oh, this Atlas, you know, I've got this group Atlas and everything goes up 25%. So, you know, whatever it is, like, I am so motivated by the idea now of like sustainability. Like, is this, just ask yourself the likelihood of that being sustainable. If you actually believed, I find it hard to believe that anyone actually thought this is it, like this is sustainable full-time, long-term or whatever, like having these people tell me what to do. That's your new bent in life. And that's going to be sustainable. Like that's just ridiculous. So you just have to ask yourself in any of these ventures, like is this sustainable for the long haul? And if it's not, then it's really just a yield off of the path that you really want to be on. That's my first thought.
It's a get rich quick idea. You're hoping to circumvent the learning curve.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thoughtless endeavor. Like it's like no critical thinking is happening. You're just doing something, right? That's one thing.
Yeah.
The other thing is just an admission that like, while everything they did, I mean, that's not ideal and everything. Way back in the day, one of the guys in our room, Nameless Deity, he's on sometimes, talks a little bit. But we used to trade way a long time ago. It's like small cap stuff, like and penny stock stuff. I mean, that's like where everybody got their start. But you like, I never was like, oh, this one's going to, you know, 50x. This one's going to go up 100x. Dude, I was taking highly leveraged positions for like 10 cent moves on 75 cent stocks or 15 cent moves on a, you know, dollar stock or something like that. You're taking a 5,000 share position and you're making 700, 800 bucks a pop. And you do that, you know, you do that when one of these stocks seems to be just blowing up and going to the moon, you just ding dong and that's it. And any overstay of that welcome, like good on you, like have fun with that. But you know, and I'm not saying I don't recommend doing that. Like I don't do that anymore, but I think everyone has participated in that world. I think most people matured out of that, realizing the lack of sustainability, or for me, it was just the incredible amount of legwork to find where the volume was. And like, you're looking for a new girlfriend every day. Whereas like with the big indexes, RTY, YM, ES, and NQ, you got four partners, you know, it's polyamorous or whatever that word is, but like, there's only four of them. You know, I'm not going to look through a batch of 15,000 options every day. It's four.
Right. Thanks for that visual.
Sorry.
Picture you. Never mind. Please, I'm just going to move on here.
Do tell.
Let's go on to the next topic we got here. We're getting about the halfway point. So I don't know which way we want to go here. So either we can talk about some of the stuff you guys have been exploring since that conversation we had with 2 Year, maybe share some of the ideas and thoughts that have been stirring from that, or we can talk about just your last quarter, kind of year in review.
Yeah.
Or quarter in review kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, if we're efficient, we can probably do a little bit of both, right?
I mean, it depends. Yeah. Let's see how you can see how you do.
You guys.
I've seen that yet. Already knows,
but I'm up for being surprised.
Well, let me surprise you. So, first of all, I'll echo your sentiment. If you didn't listen to the 2 Year Flipper episode, you need to go listen to it. For me, the thing about the Flipper episode, as I thought on it, first, the thing I thought was so cool was like his just approach and how different it was than anything I've done, you know, in any recent amount of time, anything I've really ever put effort into to try to just ding dong. Like, that's like, man, mm-hmm. That was just, it just got the wheels turning. I thought that was so cool. Like, what a different approach. What a different method, a way of thinking about things. I just thought that was cool. And the other thing, so that was like wave one. Wave two on that subject was so when I was fixing to move into trading as a real thing, back in like November, I had a bunch of conversations with different people who are full-time traders, and even like old pit people. And I didn't talk to 2 Year because I didn't know him then, but I had a lot of phone calls with them, just asking them like, hey, here's where I'm at. And like, you know, what do you think? And like, this is what I'm looking at. And they all went back to like, and Flary's going to love this. They all went back to, almost all of them were like, well, what's your process and how comfortable and confident are you in it? Because if you're confident and comfortable in your process, then like, it'll just be, you know, there'll be learning curves. It'll be difficult, but like, you go do it, right? If you listen to him talk about like his process, like, it's not even an attempt on his part to be like, I know what I'm doing. I'm the best. He just knows what he knows, and that's what he does, dude. And he just does it, and everybody else be damned. Like, he is confident in executing in the moment. He sees exactly what he wants. Boom, boom. He does it. Like, there, the clarity of what he wants to see.
No hesitation.
No hesitation. The confidence in that. And then I thought, well, what does that stem from? And he can correct me if I'm wrong. But I think it stems from, it's not necessarily that he knows what's going to happen with the market, but he knows for himself what he's going to do in the situation. The risk is mitigated. The opportunity is there. He has enough occurrences throughout the day. So it's just the next piece of data across the screen. It's just the next click. No one trade is going to take him out. No one trade is going to make his week. I mean, unless it's like an A+ awesome one, but it's not going to ruin his week. Like, it's just the confidence in the outcomes, but as he controls and mitigates the outcomes, and then the confidence in where to pull the trigger as he sees it for his process. And then I just thought, oh my God. And I actually had this thought today while I was working outside, getting a little bit of vitamin D and enjoying the beautiful weather. And I was like, dude, that's a little bit of it right there. A little bit of the nugget from that I was thinking on today was like, I was thinking like, I'm a good golfer, but I would never try to be a pro golfer because I know my game would not hold up under that amount of expectation and stress. Like, I can go play these like piddly tournaments around and like have fun and it's cool. Like, I would never depend on that in that way. And I think some of the clarity I've gotten over the last couple weeks is like leaning in and being comfortable with depending on my skill set I've used the language pressure, but really it's just the confidence in what you know, your risk parameters, you know, the outcomes, you do the deal. But I don't think I, coming into this last stretch of life, like really expected it to feel as different as it did, but it is literally just that. It's like going from a recreational, borderline part-time recreational, not really, it's more than that, but you know, golfer, to like, this is my profession now, and that level of expectation and weight on it. And it was like, man, that is, and it doesn't sound revolutionary maybe to you guys or whatever, but for me, like, I just thought, wow, that's a real clarifying, like super clarity moment for me. That was awesome. Like, and I appreciate so much him coming and spending the night talking with us for a few hours and everything, because it just, that nugget alone, I think is like a game changer.
You know, the thing that I think on top of not just the supreme confidence he had in what he was doing, like you can just tell that there was no question about any part of his plan or process, but the other part that really I thought was very, really stood out to me was that he's offloaded all of the decision-making process during the trade execution to where he only has to focus on scratching. That is the only thing he has to worry about. Like, to me, that seems like a huge thing, to offload as much of the decision-making process to only have one thing that you have to focus on. Just allows you to maintain that. Like, you have one thing to focus on that takes your mind off of everything else. You don't have to worry about where I'm going to cut this position. Oh, do I need to look for, is it pulling back? I don't care. It doesn't matter. That's not what I'm worried about. All I need to do is, if I see this, then I'm good. Otherwise I'm scratching.
Yeah. And so some of the work that I've been doing in, even before we had him, last week or whatever, some of the work I've been doing has been in that vein of like, okay, like there's the level of discretion I'm allowing myself to have is too high. So
yep,
that's what I feel for me. I am systematically and methodically taking some of that liberty away, and so that I'm excited about that. And then yeah, like it inspired me to like play with scalping. I've scalped through probably, and I know he'll laugh about this, like 6 or 8 days, like random sim days, just go to like a punch in a random date on the thing and boot the chart, and then just and just play with the idea of order flow scalping key spots with real tight risk and whatever. And actually like has been really
pretty fucking good results.
I had some I don't trust it enough to like do it live. I sim traded Thursday. Yes, yesterday.
Yeah, Thursday.
Yeah, yesterday.
The day before too.
And played with some of the scalping stuff here there. I traded another account on Wednesday, but I had Sierra in sim so I could play with some of that. And both of those days were great too. Thursday was, I didn't scalp except for at the end of the day. But it just got real, it was fun. So it's been fun. It's been a cool venture in just learning the nuance of some of that. Not that I'm necessarily going to flip to doing that, but, it's been fun. I mean, it inspired me to play with something different, you know?
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address. What about you, Flary? What have you been in the lab cooking up since that?
I definitely took some trades this weekend. Focused on UB. And again, like I want to start this by saying, I'm very process oriented to begin with, and I will go to lengths to guard my process. But there's certain times when you sort of like hear that one thing that can inspire you enough to spend either time outside of your normal time that you allocate to sort of like trying new things or looking at new things or introducing new things into your process. And I think the conversation that we had last week was one of those opportunities, mainly because it dovetails into a bunch of stuff that I feel like I already do really well in a product. And also, it really spoke to me in a sense of like one of the hardest parts I have about trading treasury, specifically the big tick ones like the ZB and UB, you know, whatever, 3125 a tick. It's hard. The barrier of entry is big. And, you know, until last week, there was no micros. And honestly, the whole point, like he was saying, is that, you know, even for a retail trader, you know, let's say you're $3 a round trip or something like that, somewhere between $2 and $3 a round trip. That's $31 a tick. So the round trip per tick ratio is why it gets traded. Now, obviously, there's some other reasons, you know, why that product has the volume it does because of the nature of what it is. But from a like product choice perspective, it makes the most sense. And like he was saying, they ruined the 2 year, they ruined the fight when they went to these like quarter ticks and all this stuff. So anyways, it really gravitated to me, sort of like the idea of why UB, but also, or ZB, whatever. I tend to like UB. The thing that I've always struggled with, and I trade UB either from a couple of like delta type areas, like historical delta type areas, clusters, whatever, or from rotation. So I like to use a Renko chart on UB. I use a 2-1-0 Renko chart, basically looking for like a 3-point rotation. I know what the average rotation is on that chart. I know, you know, like if it takes 3 ticks to rotate, how far I want to see it go, and all of the, like, I have data on sort of this, this trade, right? Like, I'm not uncomfortable in the product. I know the delta that I want. Like, I know that I want to see 400 trapped at price in delta. What are you guys laughing at?
Macros.
Macros. Oh, yes.
He's giving away
him.
All the goods.
He's
stop
giving
him,
away
stop
the
him.
Goods.
Oh, shit. Oh, funny. I didn't even see a chat. But anyways, like my point is this. Like, I know what I want to do in UB from a rotation perspective. But, you know, like he was talking about, you know, I'm comfortable in a 10 lot, a 20 lot, whatever, or a 100 lot, whatever. To have a 5 tick stop in UB, as like sort of your baseline stop on like sort of a rotation or whatever, looking for 5 ticks or 3 to 5 ticks, 10 ticks, whatever. You know, it's relatively hard for a barrier of entry for a retail trader to step in and be a multi-lot trader in that product. The idea of scalping is, you know, you're really, really protecting that downside risk. Now, I think it's very difficult. Like you were saying, like, oh, he always knows what he's doing. He has these algos. So he's just managing these scratches. Well, in a 1 tick product where you're bidding your ask, right? The two boxes that matter are basically here and here. The last traded price matters just as much too. So that was a big aha of like spending some time watching this. Is like, if the last traded price is on the bid and you're trying to lift the offer, you can't have a 1 tick stop because you're just going to get stopped automatically. I don't care what algo you have. The last traded price is down here. You just lifted it. Your stop got taken out. As soon as you lifted it, you just gave money away to Terry and the market. Terry and Ken. And so there's more to it. And I think at the end of the day, there's a protected risk that allows you to put on more size. So I spent some time doing what I know about sort of like delta and the order flow of it. And then looking at this like sort of like true, I would say like true order flow, watching orders come in. One of the things I thought that he said that was really, really powerful was, one, if he's resetting his clock on his computer every morning, mm-hmm. That just tells you that there's some sort of edge that this guy's been working on for a long time that has to do with the second, the millisecond. And, you know, if that's the case, then he's telling you that basically, you know, these timers or these like TWAP orders that are coming in on time and sales also have edge. So, you know, my journey was, okay, let's pull up time and sales. Let's turn on the milliseconds. Let's open up our delta footprints. Let's watch for trap traders. Let's look at clusters and let's see if we can find some patterns. And a few of the things, again, without macro getting too upset, a few of the things that I saw, and I'll tell you this, I had to legit send him a message and say, am I seeing ghosts in the Dom here? Because this is crazy. So he was talking about timers and things like that. So let's just say I identified that there was an aggressor algo that was turned on and it was firing orders, say, on the 33-second mark. But they were only firing orders if we hadn't downticked. it was unreal. So like an aggressor algo is like, maybe it's got, let's just say it's hypothetically, it's got checkbox one. We traded from 128.19 to 128.20. Okay. Boom. Checkbox two. Did we ever tick back down, or did the spread stay, you know, where it was? You know, sort of like a caveat to that would be, did they pull the offer and did the spread move up and the last traded price stay the same? You know, whatever, which is a bonus, right? So if they pull the offer, the spread comes up and the last traded price ticked up and stayed at 20. Now, if we sit there for the full minute until that timer is supposed to fire at 33 seconds and we don't downtick, you just lift that next price. Huh. And that is an uncomfortable thing. I like, as somebody who predominantly was a limit only trader, in sort of like this rotation concept, is like, okay, I see a reversal. The reversal is confirmed. If they downtick and fill me, you know, again, like some of the quanti math guys that I know, they would say like, you know, you're going to get filled on every downtick you try to. But like, it's always a lot, like all of your losses always include downticks, right? And all of your wins, when you're looking at stats, don't always include those, right? So you don't, when you're looking at your historical sort of like data set, like every time your signal fires and it just keeps going, it, you have to chase that. It's assuming that you got the best fill. Every time you got filled, it's assuming it downticked, right? So all of your entries also include the ones that kept going. You know, which, whatever, chew on that on replay. But anyways, I would watch these guys, right? So, okay, so we have this aggressor algo. We tick up to 20. We stay there for a full minute. The 33-second mark comes, and it's like at 3 seconds till it. I'm lifting 21s, and on cue, you would watch this guy lift the 20s into 21s, right? Which, mm-hmm, I'm not moving the market, right? So I'm just lifting 21s. I'm in at 21. We're down at 20 again. So, you know, the bid's 20. The offer's 21. I took 21s. This guy comes in, he goes 21s, and then boom, we go 22s. And when we don't even have to fill me at 22, but the thing that I took to heart that he said is, you get these free looks. I can't tell you how many free looks I had at a tick last week trying this. It was so cool. So, you know, we're bid 20, we're offered 21. The timer comes in and boom, it hits up. And now we're last traded price at 21. I had a, you know, in Sierra, you can say like, when we trade a certain price, trail my stop. So when we trade even one contract at 21, my stop, I set it at two ticks, just because I can't personally just like scratch all those. I wanted to give these time to work and sort of like learn, right? So when I lift the 20s or the 21s the first time, right, my stop is going to be 19. I'm giving it two ticks. So when the timer comes in and it goes boom, and now we're sitting last traded price, they go offer 21, our last traded price is 21. My stop goes from 19 to 20. And now the last traded price is 21. The bid is 20, which I'm in there, right? I'm in the, mm-hmm, bid, and I'm moving my, you know, fuck you, Sammy. I'm moving my shit back and forth, trying to be in the back of the queue. And the last traded price is at 21. I have a free look at that tick. And, you know, Bobby, you're saying you're hitting some things on sim. I took a free look on a couple of 10 lots last week with no fear. And the thing is like, I'll risk a few hundred dollars, like in NQ, no problem. It's kind of the same thing in this. And so once you get comfortable with like what your idea is or your system, and, you know, obviously you have enough capital to manage that sort of idea, is like, the max I was ever going to lose was like, say, $600. I was doing mostly like 2s and 5s. But even like a 5 lot in UB was way more than like I was normally doing on some of these rotational trades. I had a couple of trades where I had free looks at like a 10 lot when I was really confident I was seeing that what I was seeing throughout the week. And just a really cool feeling, that concept of getting that free look, where it's like, man, if they just keep that last traded price at 21s and they go fill, and without going too much into it, there's a bunch of other sauce about like, you know, where the bid and the ask is, and like, does the spread move up? Are they pulling the offer? And then is the spread moving up, but the last traded price stays? So it's not as, you know, sort of like concrete. There's definitely a bunch of stuff into it, but like sort of this idea of like extremely tight risk, sizing up and finding a bunch of opportunities, it really gravitated to me, because although I don't have an edge in some of these things, like he's talking about like timers and, you know, 10 plus years of watching, you know, 500,000 contracts a day come through the market, right? That's why he knows to watch for these things, these 25 watt sellers and aggressor algos that will only fire on the uptick or whatever. But what I know is that I spent, you know, a significant amount of time knowing that if I see 400 lots trapped at price on a, you know, 210 Renko chart, that this thing, it reverses, you know, 68% of the time. And, you know, I've got my data points. So when you mix these sort of like inexperience in this area and the nuggets he's giving and the risk management of knowing that the max I can ever lose is two ticks, and most of the time I'm getting a free look at a tick, and the ability to size up inside of that with the strength of the order flow information that I already have from, you know, watching Delta and watching these things in my areas of interest and rotations, it was kind of a cool week to follow along with all that stuff. So it's certainly something that I'll continue to look into. And, you know, I think the one thing is like just the ranges in these markets right now, specifically the ones he was talking about, these like ZBUTs, they are, let's say, 1.5 handle or less ranges. Mm-hmm. When this changes, and Macro and I were having this conversation last week, when this changes, this stuff might not be as, like he was saying, I don't want to get in front of the, you know, the whatever, the tanker or the whatever. There was 3 and 5 handle days that weren't, you know, too far back as sort of the regular. And you just got to be careful of that stuff as you're experimenting, especially if you're experimenting like whatever in the actual market. Because this thing, you know, it bites, man. UB, ZB, they bite. When they bite and you screw up, they bite real hard. And I mean, I've been bitten in them on, you know, single lot contracts, two lot contracts. I can't even imagine if I did something stupid and I was sitting in a, you know, significantly larger. So anyways, right. I think that there's definitely something to sort of like, there was edge given away. That's all I'll say. Yeah. And he was doing it in a way that like he said, I spent a significant amount of time doing it this week, or at least like, let me just take a look at this. I think I can maybe leverage the information that was shared. It takes a skill set just to actually execute it. And that's why he's confident in sharing it. And I think he kind of alluded that to that a little bit, right? Like half of the battle is executing it and understanding like there's about 7 different ways that you can scratch a trade in a single tick product where the bid and the ask is here. And then your scratch ends up being down here. Because if you're lifting, your scratch is here. Well, you know, you can scratch from below. You can scratch from above. There's all kinds of goofy stuff that kind of goes on with like when they're pulling. I mean, because you think about all the sort of scenarios that can happen with the bid and the offer, the last traded price, and a single tick sort of spread product where you're only looking for that one tick. You know, there's a lot of like sort of nuanced, cool things that can kind of happen in there. And I think it's at least a way to sort of like have a really tight managed risk and understand and look at the product, and a really cool way to leverage a decent sort of understanding of order flow.
Well said. And not only was there some edge given away in that conversation, which I think there's a lot more than some, we are talking with him about trying to get him back and doing a deep dive how to scalp episode that hopefully he gives us some dates here soon. I'd like to get that on the schedule. Because I think that's gonna be a really fun conversation.
Oh, he just said I just saw the chat. He said he's listening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shit. So, and just for reference, when you're thinking about, I mean, I don't think either of us are recommending. Oh, hey, I'm trading, and I've decided after listening to you guys, I'm gonna go live trade as a scalper. No, don't do that.
No.
If you want to look at this, would be my thing. If you're thinking like that might be interesting, obviously do it in sim or on micros or whatever, depending on the product. Fleury just talked a lot about specific like tick ranges, da 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 da. I did it with NQ. I didn't even go to UB.
I played around in ES and NQ this weekend.
I was trading NQ, 10 tick stop, 10 tick take profit, 15 tick, 20 tick take profit. So it was still a 5-point target, you know, 20 ticks, 10, 15, 20 were the targets. So the bracket, if it fully fills, it works out to 4.5-1 risk reward. So you only have to be 20% correct to break even minus commissions. So you start thinking win rate or hit rate at a 35 to 45% with enough occurrences is how I was able to stack all those points doing that, because yeah, you're not making many points, but you're scalping at the thing. Another thing he said that if you don't want to scalp, just take this nugget to heart. When I asked him, what do you do when it moves, you know, and it continues to go and you just scalped it for one tick and it goes a handle? And he's like, oh, I just keep scalping it. And right. That was something right. Exactly. That was something within Q I realized in replaying a lot of these days is actually the big point takes on these replays all came from like a 45 or 50 point move that I was able to participate in like 35 times. I mean, some ridiculous number of occurrences. And it's like, you know, bink, bink. It's like little base hit, like tiny, but not even base hits. It's like little chip, 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 chip. And you think, and it's what's interesting as well, if you're playing around with this idea in a faster paced market like NQ, there are still things, and I'm not trading this live. I mean, I was trading it live as in I was in sim mode in a market in trading the order and the action as it came to me. It's not like I was, you know, I'm not going like looking through the day and then choosing where I want to trade it. And then doing that would be ridiculous. You would learn nothing.
You're making me feel degenerate too.
Yeah. I just want to say all that before we get it going. But here's the thing. If you want to play around with it, time and sales, you mentioned time and sales, the frequency, and Flaherty and I texted about this because I was like, oh my God, I'm playing with this, is crazy. And he was like, oh, and it's not as, I haven't got it quite as structured or form fitted. It's a lot more, there's a lot more, what's the word, discretion with when to pull the trigger in NQ because it's a wild book. But if you watch the time and sales down to the millisecond, you will notice at certain times after certain things have happened, you will notice these little, it's kind of similar. You'll see it order fire, ding, 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 clearing the, you know, offer. And then there's a very similar unfolding of events that follow where it's not just that happens and it's like a stop run above a short term, small time frame swing high. There's this like confirmation both in how like the first downtick is absorbed. And you should, I was about to say, you should only have, but like, I'm not giving advice. So you'll see, if you watch this, there'll be, maybe it will tick down a point and a half or 2 points on NQ. And you'll see stuff getting dumped on the bid that just gets taken. And then they reinitiate almost at the same interval. And then it's another little waterfall up, another little blip, 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 both in market orders and certain size. So it's not like onesies, twosies. It's like threesies to sevensies. So it'll oftentimes be the same. It'll be the same little firework, pause, the same little firework. It is a thing that you have to stare at that thing. I mean, you've got to be locked in. You can't be farting around chatting with everybody and then just happen to click it or something. But it is it was fun. It was a whole different, I felt like I was doing something completely different because obviously I was. So there's fun stuff. I mean, other markets, there's other fun nuanced stuff like that. And again, 10 ticks, dude, you're talking 10 tick stop on NQ. That's nothing.
Yeah.
Right. I'm trading that with 6 or 8. Right. But it's 4.5 to 1 on the little bitty baby bracket.
The key, though, in my big like aha takeaway from the conversation with 2 year last week was that whole like free look idea, right? Where I'm sure you're like the examples you're saying, like you're leaning into something that you already know about the market, right? Whether it's like some big buyer or whatever, like a large trader or some time thing that you're doing or like a structured level, blah, blah, blah. But it's about getting that free look. So if you can identify something that like is an aha moment, and then you lift the offer with them and the market comes with you, right? Your thesis was correct. And you can go from what was a tight stop to no stop and have that free look.
Oh, yeah.
And you do that on size.
Yes.
That was the big aha. So like translate that to any market you want. And I think, you know, harder to do in NQ because the thing's moving like,
much
you
harder.
Know, a meth addict in the DOM to, like, reading it. Like, you know, like, so, but there is some things like with an Amos Delta and some things that you can do, I think, in NQ to like get free looks where like just that concept of like potentially entering on that and then like pushing it into something different. But that was the big, like, so I don't think you need to, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, it doesn't have to be this one tick structure. Like, take it for what I mean, this is how I dissect when people share information, is like the big giveaway there was like, there's a guy who's made a pretty substantial career off of getting a free look at one tick on size. Right now, obviously, there's a ton of other stuff that's going into this and why is he taking that free look and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, you know, there's 10 trades taken. There's 8 scratches or 7 scratches, 2 wins and 1 loss. Right. And whatever the formula is. Right. Like, you get the idea. It's all about getting that free look. Man, I'll tell you what, there was nothing sweeter than sitting in that trade with a free look at a tick. On, you know, size that was like significantly bigger than I was normally taking after just like using some of my normal stuff. And I think that's sort of like, it's a trade idea. It's a trade structure. You still kind of need the market inefficiency or whatever to sort of enter the trade, whether you're staring at the time and sales, whether you have trap traders, whether you have some order flow thing, or it's just a level, right? The idea is like, in my opinion, sort of like similar to the edge, the alpha is sort of like getting that free look at the tick. And doing that on size, which is really just like some sort of like risk management sort of strategy that is, you know, leverageable, right? Like, can you get 10 opportunities a day to be getting a free look or like trying to get a free look on a 10 lot? Or can you get like, you know, 2 or 3, lick my fingers, see what I think discretionarily the market might do, but I'm going to give it 20 points in NQ and I can only afford to put on a 1 or a 2 mini because that's like a big stop and I don't want it to, you know, like, what would you rather do? And so I think it's just like an alternative. And I think The other cool thing is, you know, like he was speaking to the freedom of it. Like, I still traded NQ, right? I still came in every day. I've got my stuff pretty well dialed in on what I want to do in NQ. I came in, I executed my trades in NQ to my version of lick the finger, stick it in the air and see which way the wind's blowing. And then once I executed the trades, whether they were winners or losers, I would say, okay, I'm good over here in this market today, especially since the market kind of was doing a lot of this churny end of month end stuff. And I would go over and just stare at the time and sales and set up charts to watch, you know, watch this sort of like order flow based scalp strategy that I was working on in UB. And you don't need to be like, yeah, you have to have a general understanding of the market. It's not like I'm diving into UB for the first time ever. Like, I think Bobby, you nailed that there. It's like, don't just dive into some brand new market. I've spent a significant amount of time understanding this market already. Like, although I don't know the things that, you know, he knows or was sharing or alluding to, I know enough about this market to know how I want my tools calibrated, what I think structure is doing. And I have a directional bias that's not just a completely blind guess when I step into this market. Like, I know the data of the rotations and things like that. So to be able to just log in at say like 10 and be like, okay, I'm going to watch the order flow is a completely different thing. So I guess to say is, it's not just scalping. It's not just UB or ZB or whatever. It's the idea of getting this sort of like some sort of trigger, whether it's order flow based or whatever, around the orders coming into the market or whatever, the structure that you're at, and getting this tight risk and free look at potentially a move up. And how many times can you get that tight risk free look and, you know, do that on size? And if the answer is a lot and efficiently, then maybe there's, you know, an inefficiency that you can capture there better than you were before, which is a big, you know, sort of other rabbit hole, maybe a talk for another day. But
all right, well, before we keep going for another half hour here, I think it's time to move on and do some good, bad, and ugly. What do y'all say?
I'm down.
You gotta get Bob out of here so you can watch his Duke game.
That's right, baby.
All right, guys. Well, talk to me about your past week. I actually can go back 2 weeks if you really want. Good, bad, ugly, one, all, or both.
Last week. I'm trying to dial it up. Okay, yeah, last week. I don't know. So I was on vacation the week before, which was cool. Didn't really trade, didn't really look at stuff very much till we got back. Probably the longest break from all that I've had in, a long time.
I always feel so much better after even a short break.
Yeah, I don't take a lot of breaks. I love to watch and be like, not just do I see that we got here, and I know that the charts can tell you, but like I watched us get to where we are. So like the nuance of how we arrived. So came back in. I don't remember what we did. I think I might have traded the end of that week, but this past week I traded lighter than normal, and less entries. Just working on trying to just, after having a break like that, just kind of easing back in and not blowing the doors off anything. I did have some good trades on those $5 accounts, baby. So some of those are done. So thanks, Top Step, for that. Appreciate you guys for that one. And we'll kind of ease back into it. So I guess the good was just
not pressing too hard.
Yeah, like coming back and not feeling like I got a week to catch up on or whatever. Like I just kept it like pretty chill. And I guess that's the good.
I gave you that one.
Probably so that was good. What was the bad? The bad. I don't know how much bad or ugly there was this week.
No, you don't have to have a bad or ugly. There's nothing that says you have to do something stupid.
Usually it'll stand out to me pretty well. I guess so it's like a bad, but it's like a shadow side good. The bad was I realized some of that stuff from 2 year and his confidence and his gusto or whatever. And like something about that clicked and made me kind of aware of some of my own, like some work I still have to do, mm-hmm. even in some of my methodical, even some of my trading approach, like there's some things that need to be like swept up a little bit. And so that's bad because it's still there in theory, but it's also good that I'm
aware.
I am more keenly aware, and I'm able to articulate that in a way that I haven't been able to before. So that's exciting.
I like that, man. What about you, Flary? How was your week?
Week was good overall. I would say the good was what day did we hit? Was it Thursday we hit 381? Wednesday 381.
Yeah,
because today's Friday. Duh. Holiday week. Okay, so Wednesday was the good. And it's the good because of the bad. So had a great short out of the open. Opening range was a no tick OR above like a beautiful like 80-ish point reversal, 80-ish point rotation that reversed right in the OR on Wednesday, like literally right on the open, which was pretty nice.
I think I took that trade too, and I had my runner come back on me.
You did take the trade.
It was a nasty open. I'll say that. So yeah, that rotation out of the open, let's see, on Wednesday was 60 points into the open, and they were rallying hard, basically from like 7 o'clock up. And I think a lot of people probably got stuck sort of like thinking that was going to be a continuation thing. And the rotation down off the open, I think a lot of people get really hurt on these days, which will probably be my ugly as well. We'll all be sort of focused around this rotation. So 60 points up in the open, no tick OR, got short right away. I have some rules that I do my best to follow around like not fading no tick ORs. Which basically means that like once the 30-second opening range was set, we never traded a single tick above the high. When that happens, like, you know, it sounds so stupid, but like you can't have a trend day down if you ever trade above the opening range high.
Yes.
Right? Like it's so stupid, but like, hey, pretty true. So, you know, I mean, as long as that's happening and until there's like a significant rotation, like of like say 35 points or more, I try not to fade a directional move out of the open. I was fortunate enough to like have some ideas of why I wanted to be short and blah, blah, blah. So anyways, I shorted the opening range low, added at the consolidation to 500. And then they took, and this is where I think, again, a lot of people got a little jacked up. They took 126 point rotation down from 500. So, and that 126 point rotation was right to basically 18,381. And if you look at an hourly chart, they've sort of been doing this thing where like there's this balance area from the FOMC. I'm going to get it in the camera. There's this balance area from the FOMC, sort of like the few days before it up to it, where you have these like really critical swing highs. And the market has basically just been coming down, ticking those swing highs to the tick, shooting back up into sort of this like wedge or descending channel, and then just dropping right back down and testing. So it's like it's like basically like test, pop, test lower, pop, test lower. And they've just been sort of checking the box and all this stuff. And so 381 was that spot. And I think there was probably a lot of people, and if you look at the lows or look at my Twitter, I showed a picture of the sellers into the lows on these things. And they were just getting pummeled into the lows. They just kept trying to push because guilty as charged, if it goes lower, this thing's going to roll down. We could be trading like 250, like the, I think 273, 271 is where FOMC print started. And even further. And I think a lot of people are trying to like push through these big key swing highs to see if like, see if we can get it through this next one. Myself included. I did not do that on Wednesday. I literally went flat 281 or 381 and went over to UB and started looking for timers. So that was my good, because the bad was that on Monday, I didn't do that. I shorted into whatever the level was. The if you go look at an hourly chart, there's 381, whatever, look to the left, whatever the next one up is. I was shorting through that. And the idea is a conviction trade, right? Like, you know, we're sort of in this downtrend. They lost the daily. If we break this key level, then 381. If we break 381, then 271. And so I want to be trying to hold size through these big key moments. And, you know, these trades have the potential to be like week makers, month maker, quarter makers, but they also hurt a ton when they pull back exactly at that level. And, you know, I didn't get into too many nasty ads or anything like that, because I knew what I was sort of getting into by Monday, only because I did it on Friday as well and got the whole trade stuffed in my face again. So, Bobbin, you and I were kind of talking about this last week, but it happened again on Monday. And I would just say that was sort of the bad, is like, you know, really these conviction trades that are all, you know, sort of A plus setups, where you're really just hoping that like this can potentially be that big, you know, 300, 400 point, like sort of trend day down, you know, which, you know, again, can be an outsized day. It takes confidence to hold a setup through those. It sucks when they come back to break even. It sucks even worse if you start doing dumb shit and you're like really convicted and you're adding on the way back up and you basically like actually turn a solid green day into a red day. But my bad would be that I would say Monday and even Friday last week, I had what would have been like a multi-day green day, basically be a scratch or a slight loss, leaning into sort of this idea. Mm-hmm. And Wednesday, it was kind of that, like, you know, fool me once, fool me twice, fucking shit ain't happening on Wednesday. So I covered that thing, and wouldn't you know it, I think it traded like 6 points lower and then ripped back up. So that was my good. It ripped tits. That was my good and the bad. I think the ugly would be probably that same Wednesday. I trade with a handful of other guys too, or just like speak with some other guys. And I think some people had some difficulties on that push down on Wednesday. And I'm usually pretty comfortable just sort of speaking up and just being like, hey man, you know, I think you guys might be a little out of pocket here. Or you might be trading a little emotional. And there was an opportunity to maybe do that on Wednesday and didn't. You know, I take that stuff to heart. Listen, ask me how I know, right?
It's hard to do that stuff. But yeah, I love that in our group, that I feel like we're pretty good at reaching out to each other and being like, hey, dude, are you okay? Everything all right?
Yeah. You're being a little quiet. Yep, that whole thing. So, you know, I think, you know, maybe a missed opportunity for myself to at least reach out, whatever, or to step in. You know, obviously, at the end of the day, we're playing a big boy game. Everyone's got to manage their own shit. But listen, when you do this with like some brothers and, you know, you're in this sort of like thing, you know, there's a couple of things. You know, there's a couple of times when you say that. The interesting thing is like that Monday and that Friday, I basically said like, hey, you guys are fucking wrong, dude. This isn't short. Like, let's go. Like, how dare you long right here? And I was dead wrong. And I, you know, went back to zero. So maybe that had something to do with why I didn't say anything Wednesday, which, you know, the market has this beautiful way of just lulling you into this sort of like, you know, whatever, moot, like comfortability with it. And I just think the bad or the ugly, I would say, would be there was an opportunity to maybe just speak up and help some people that I could hear were being a little bit emotional on the long side on Wednesday.
I think that's an awesome ugly, which sucks to have it, but I mean, that's just such a great thing to point out and take away from that. I love it. My good for the week. I think it was Tuesday that Top Step X platform was having the ping issues and connectivity issues.
Holy shit! Yeah, I saw some of that.
They
made me have to trade an extra day because they took away losing trades.
They took all the losing trades away from like a certain time window, and they did it again on Wednesday. But when I was looking through my trade log on that account, and I was trading on Tuesday, I had like maybe one or two losers that got wiped out, and I was kind of annoyed that I didn't get better benefit from that, so to say, I guess. But I guess the good is that I didn't need it to have a good day, so I kind of decided to take that positive aspect out of it instead. My bad for the week, though, is I've been slacking a little bit on doing the written journals. I'm still doing the grades and the trade analysis part, but I haven't been keeping up with that. And I think I'm going to move that to an ugly because I think I missed two this week. And I had some stuff happening in the week that kind of ate out the time that I normally do that stuff in. But I really, if I want to take this seriously, I got to find the time to do that stuff because that really is the most important part. And you can't.
This is like
you can't go back.
The one week I wasn't reading it, dude.
You can't go back either and like recreate the emotions. That's the hardest part. Like you got to sit down afterwards and write down what those emotions were because you put too much time behind it, and then suddenly the data is useless now. So I've cheated myself out of 2 days of some really good data that I could have been collecting.
You'll have that.
Yeah, yeah, but that just means I get to improve next week, right?
That's right.
Earning or learning,
right? I'm tired of learning. All right, let's do a bold prediction. Let's wrap this show up.
All right.
All right, so Baba, you had the idea for this week. The gap for Sunday's open, what's it going to be?
So if I could caveat that, so I would say the opening 1 minute.
Well, first of all, let's talk about why this should be a little spicier. They had markets closed on Friday, and then we still had like PCE and a bunch of other news drops. Fed Chair Powell was speaking around 11:30. So there's a bunch of stuff that's happened that the market's been closed for.
Is it closed on Monday too?
No, or no. Normal trading hours on Monday, I think.
Am I just taking Monday off in my head?
There's probably enough people doing it, or might as well. Anyway, sorry, Baba.
Yeah, so like, I don't know. We can do it, whatever. The gap from, that was a little bit of post-market trading, till so I have NQ closing at 465
from the cash close.
So cash close 466, what, three quarter, something like that.
Yeah,
I don't actually have charts pulled up. I just used Google. So.
What do you want to know? What the cash close was?
What was the cash close? Yeah.
462 something.
God, yeah, everybody's different. Weird. All right.
Yeah, I show 462 something.
Okay. All right. So what's it going to do, Baba?
So I think we open at 440. 18440.
I'm so glad I'm going to be bolder than you.
Well, I don't think it's going to be a crazy gap. I just have a thought in my head of what's going to happen.
What are you thinking, Flary?
We will open at 419.75.
1975. What's so special about 419.75?
That is the start of the 1 hour candle from the Wonka move that they did. Was that Wednesday where they just ripped it and all the geniuses that knew why it ripped me like $8 bajillion on options in like 2 seconds. So that 1 hour candle was made on less than 0.25% of positive or negative delta, making it like a massive, basically neutral candle. And it has not been fully retraced yet. And as I'm just like generally bearish in this area and this whole like pop test lower thesis, let's just gap down to the base of that candle, which is whatever I said.
419.75.
Yep.
Interesting. If I were going to predict.
Baba likes it. He's looking at that. He likes it. He's like, that's actually pretty good.
That's pretty good. I would say 415 half if we were going to go down there. 15 half is what I would actually say.
Well, you can't change
You already said, dude. You can't re-bold my bold.
I know, right?
No, it's fine. It's fine. Just it's in the ether so everyone can hear. It's fine.
All right.
So just for clarity's sake, I think we'll open at 440. We'll back test like 48.75, and then we will go to 15.5.
I'm not writing all that down.
That's fine. It's on the podcast.
Opening at 440. That's what you said. All right. I'm just gonna say it's gonna open inside the last hourly candle.
Oh, okay.
So the 1500 hourly candle. It's gonna.
What are you giving yourself, like 50 points?
That's 25 points. 30 points?
You taking the like settlement candle?
I'm saying inside the candle that printed at 1500 CST.
Okay, yeah, so the settlement candle. Yeah, so
48 quarter to 76 quarter.
Okay.
I think you got a good chance of winning if we don't.
Yeah, that's pretty bold, dude. We're going to open where we closed.
You guys are both saying low. You guys are both saying low. I'll just say above then. I'll say above. We'll say the top half of that candle. How's that?
Awesome.
Top half. All right. Above the exact like doji candle.
Top half of the doji. Yeah. Not above it, or it has to be within it. Top
half. Love it.
All right. You front running 420.
Yeah, right.
Let's just make it 419.
I think that's going to do it for today's episode. Special thank you here to Baba Flary for joining us tonight. Everybody listening, sticking around to the end. Also, thank you for the comments in there. Really makes it fun reading through some of those. please show our panelists some love. Click on those links in the show notes. Remember, you can check out the new combined. Well, I guess it's not new anymore. Check out the combined Discord where you can trade with Baba every Friday morning on the free side when it's not a holiday. Heckle us live on these recordings. You can even participate in some cash poker games after we wrap when we're not watching basketball.
Tonight, let's go.
We'll be back soon with another exciting episode, hopefully as impressive as Friday's news move. But until then, help lower that bar, hit that 5-star rating on your way out, and have a happy Easter.
Oh, great job, Kyle. What a good little wholesome outro.
Happy He's like, Easter. You guys went 2 hours over again. God damn it.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.